Hello and welcome to a special edition of the IT News Podcast, sponsored by Mimecast and the State of Security Report 2024. Stick around until the end to catch insights from Garrett O'Hara, Mimecast's Senior Director of Sales Engineering for APAC, as he discusses the emerging challenges posed by the rise of collaboration platforms and the imperative for organizations to safeguard their expanding threat surface. Our annual IT News State of Security Report for 2024 is out now, examining key trends across security domains and, as you'd expect from IT News, seeking end-user validation of those trends. This year, we're extending beyond the report with a series of interviews with security leaders. Our guest is NAB's Chief Security Officer, Sandro Bucchianeri. NAB has made Secure by Design the centerpiece of its security strategy, supported by people, process, and technology, that collectively aims to keep the bank and its customers safe. In this episode, we look at NAB's security operations, the key pillars of its security strategy, and what activity is having the biggest impact from a security perspective.
Maybe a good place to start, I'm just wondering, can you talk a little bit about how security is resourced at NAB and how it works as a function with different parts of the organization?
Yeah, sure. So I'm the chief security officer at the bank, not the chief information security officer. That's within my entire remit. I look after both physical and cyber security, and that's end to end across the group wherever we operate, including subsidiaries. It's a centralized function. We have hundreds of colleagues globally based around the world. Main centers are Australia, India, Vietnam, and New Zealand. We have a physical security function, which looks after our physical assets, our buildings, making sure our colleagues and customers remain safe. And they provide real-time incident management and collaboration with both internal and external stakeholders, such as AFP, et cetera. Then we have quite a large cyber security function, and that covers everything from vulnerability management, threat intelligence, security operations, et cetera. And then finally, we have a global operations center, which sits in technology, but we work very closely with them and they're responsible for everything from service management, networks, et cetera.
I think it predated your time, but can you give us a sense of why the bank went down the route of consolidating all different types of security into one function or portfolio?
Yeah, it's because we needed to make sure that we had one function that was responsible for driving security culture within the organization. And most global organizations have been down this path in the past. And I think the bank wanted to consolidate everything. And that's why we went down that path to consolidate physical and cybersecurity. And it also helps when we talk about our fusion center and how we operate across the group.
I think that's a good opportunity maybe to talk a little bit about the Fusion Center. So I understand this function's brought together physical security, cyber, and also global operations. But I'm just wondering, can you talk a little bit more about that structure and what it's achieved to date?
Yeah, sure. So it's been around for about 3 years. The main outcome that we've seen so far is that collaboration across the different spaces have improved significantly. So the intent was to bring physical security, cybersecurity, and our global operations together under one roof so that we can respond to incidents much faster than we would have done in the past. So I give you a simple example. If you think about some of the protest activity that we've seen over the years, is predominantly related to climate change. Protesters are not happy with many financial institutions funding coal, for example, and they would protest at a given location because of that. Our physical security team would predominantly deal with that. But in order for those protesters to organize themselves, they would use social media or they would use digital channels to organize themselves. So that's where the cyber element comes in. So that's also threat intelligence that would gather that information. They would then put onto physical security, who can then better protect our customers, our colleagues, and our physical assets. And then obviously the Global Operations Center looks after our availability of our services, et cetera. And they would feed in information also back into physical security, which then helps us managing any event in that instance. And that's just one example of how the Fusion Center has come about and what we've achieved to date.
The Fusion Center itself, has that evolved or changed in the period of time that it's been alive as an entity?
Yes, it has. Things like seamless incident management and collaboration has definitely evolved, where it used to be a very siloed view of the world. it's moved to much more collaborative so that we can understand how it impacts different parts of our business. Also, the different security teams, operational teams, et cetera, sat across multiple sites. So that collaboration has helped bring that closer together. And then because we have operations globally, we do a follow the sun model so that we make sure that we have 24/7 coverage.
If we can step back a little bit and talk about what security strategy looks like at the bank, I'd be really interested just to find out in your perspective what some of the key pillars are or what some of the key focus areas are.
Yeah, sure. So our security ambition has always been keeping the bank and our customers safe by delivering world-class security capabilities. And the five pillars that we have powers our ultimate pillar, which is secure by design. So essentially shifting the conversation left. And we've got the five pillars that we have is protect. So this is a threat and data-led approach to protect our bank. We have mindset, which predominantly revolves around security culture and the mindset of everyone on how we protect our organization and more importantly, our customers and their data. We have simplify. So simplifying our environment and our very complex environment, making sure things are much easier to operate, providing a great experience for everyone. Standardize is another pillar, and that's making sure that the choices you have, you can have any color of security you like, so long as it's black. That makes things much easier. That ties back into our simplification pillar. And then the last one we have is partner. And the partnership pillar is important on how we partner with industry, academia, government, et cetera, on emerging risks. That is then all underpinned by 11 capabilities. And that's essentially what makes up our security strategy for the group.
So you mentioned at a very high level there that the overarching approach was, I think, secure by design and shift left. And that's kind of language we probably most often associate with the developer ecosystem and with agile methodology. But I'm assuming you're talking much more broadly there in terms of the application of that terminology. Can you explain a little bit about what you mean by that?
Correct. So when our developers are busy with their coding or wanting to deliver a new piece of software, a new feature, et cetera, they need to do so securely. Now, what typically happens in the old way of doing things globally is that developers would create something that would push it through to production very quickly because they've got deadlines to meet. In doing so, they've missed steps in the process. They could deliver vulnerable applications, vulnerable code into production, and then we go through the cyclical process of having to fix everything again. So the whole methodology around shifting left and doing secure by design is that we're doing it from the onset. There's code analysis that gets done right in the beginning of the program of work. Security consulting in my world is baked into the overall program of work so that by the time it goes into production, and because we've used the standardized approach, we've simplified everything, we pretty much introduce safe code and safe solutions straight into production without the worry that we've had in the past. And that's the predominant issue that most organizations have, is that they haven't focused on the basics or their basic hygiene over the years.
I'm interested, though, does shift left also apply outside of the developer ecosystem as well? So, for example, where you have, say, citizen developers or citizen data scientists or others that are using more low-code tools, does shift left entail more security governance structure placed around their tools or ways of working? So it affects all people, not just the developers who are the...
Correct. The developers were just an example, but it goes to everything we do from our branch tellers to our concierge services that you have when you're coming into a building, to our executive leaders, to Andrew, our new CEO, to our board members, et cetera. It's making sure security is front and center in everything that we do. Similar to when you are traveling abroad, and you're walking down the street and you two nefarious characters walking toward you, you instinctively move across the road so that you can be safe, right? Because that's that instinctive nature to protect yourself. And that's because it's your physical safety. And the same would apply on the digital side, on the cyber side, making sure security is front of mind, that you're not just clicking on a link, that you're not just opening up random files and all those things. It's having that front of mind. And that's why when we say shift left, secure by design, it gets baked into everything we do.
One other thing I thought that was interesting that you mentioned, which I'm glad you mentioned, was that security from a focus perspective is not just about protecting bank assets, but it's also about protecting customers. I know the sort of customer protection side is a big priority for banks. I wanted to specifically ask about businesses because we're a business-focused publication. Particularly smaller and medium-sized businesses often don't have resources to manage security. I wondered how you're working in that segment to protect some of those organizations and to share some of your security expertise.
This is a major focus for us. And the number of cyber attacks is definitely growing year on year, not just on big organizations such as ourselves, but the small and medium area specifically. And it can take businesses many years to recover from any kind of attack or ransomware or whatever the case may be. And as we are Australia's leading business bank, we try to play a key role in helping small to medium businesses be more secure. So we have done a lot of work in this space specifically. We've launched our partnership with CrowdStrike to provide their first 3 year for small business customers on CrowdStrike's advanced solution. We provide free cyber assessment services in partnership with Microsoft. We do a lot of webinars educating small to medium businesses. We provide a cybersecurity toolkit. We work closely with the ACSC, the Australian Cybersecurity Centre, to make sure that we can put small businesses at the front and centre of most of the things that we're doing, and also helping the small businesses in all industries understand what this means to them. If you're a coffee shop owner, your most important thing is how you're going to pay the rent is by selling more cups of coffee rather than worrying about the cyber challenges that you're facing because you're a coffee shop. So it's making sure that education is also part and parcel of everything we do in the small business community.
You mentioned a couple of partners there, and obviously you mentioned partnership was one of the pillars of the security strategy as well. I just wondered if you could talk a little bit about how you go about determining what partners or partnerships to go with and what technical capabilities that you bring into your security environment.
Yeah, so tooling is always a very important thing. When we look at different best of breed services, we try and look at all aspects of what we are actually trying to achieve. And it fills the age old saying of people, process, and technology. So when we look at our various tool sets, our processes, our people that we have, we try to always go for the best in breed. But it's also important to make sure we are looking at the cost and that everything balances out. So we try to get the best value, mapping their capabilities and ensuring that the tools and services are fit for purpose. It's also important to ensure that anything that we roll out for ourselves is fit for purpose for us. But in the example of the small to medium businesses, we're trying to provide them also with best in breed enterprise grade security because they would typically not be able to afford those type of solutions because it's just too expensive, which is why we've put in these discount offers. We've made some things available freely, et cetera.
Just from a tooling perspective for yourselves, when you're referring to best in breed, obviously one of the challenges of that is you end up with a lot of different sort of tools to monitor. How is your organization going about getting that view of incidents and detections and threats and that complete landscape?
So from a security perspective, and when we look at the tooling environment, yes, there's lots and lots of tools. My LinkedIn is filled with third-party vendors trying to sell me stuff. Now, it's not just about, there's no silver bullet for security, and that's the important thing to remember. The most important thing we focus on, and that I've been trying to focus on for the best part of however long I've been in the industry now, over 25 years, is security hygiene. And getting back to our basics, with anybody that you talk to in industry, they'll probably say the same thing, is that patching is a problem, identity access management is a problem, etc. What we're trying to do is make sure that the different tools that we do go after can help solve those challenges, so that we can provide a much safer and securer environment for the organization and for the customers.
And what would you say is the most impactful thing that the bank has done from a securities perspective in the past year? And are you going to say cyber hygiene there because that's what we've just discussed, or is there something else?
No, I think that's probably the number one thing. And it may seem very basic, but the beauty of technology is that there's always something cool and new around the corner, right? We had Bitcoin in there. That was going off on a tangent. It was all great. And then it just fell off a cliff, in the sense that generative AI came along and now everybody's focusing on Gen AI. And then the next thing will come along because the cycle within tech is so short. So we have focused quite a lot on our security hygiene, making sure that we can embed processes, our technology, et cetera, in everything we do, which then ties right back to our strategy, which is secure by design. And that makes sure that we have a secure environment that we can operate in. So I think that's probably been the biggest thing that we focused on. The other one as well is moving to a threat and data-led approach. So understanding the threats that are out there, how that may impact our environment and where we can actually focus our investment dollars. Because there's nothing worse than having investment money and just buying random tools if you don't have a strategy that it can help enable.
And just in the final couple of seconds I've got you, if people are excited and wanting to work in the security organization at NAB and work alongside you, what advice can you give them?
Look, working in security is extremely rewarding. keeping our customers and our colleagues safe. The example I use is that I like to protect people. Now, I've got that innate ability or instinct to protect. And I got into security because my grandmother got scammed. It was a very long time ago. And because of that, I wanted to make sure that could never, ever happen to her again, but more importantly, to everyone else. So I think it's that instinctive ability to want to protect. People must be curious and they need to be up for a challenge because this is not an easy environment to be in. However, it is a very rewarding environment. And it doesn't matter your background. We need diversity in security, and not just gender, but race, color, creed, etc. We need diversity because everybody brings a different perspective to the table. And there's great opportunities for anybody that wants to come into an organization such as NAB for career development and upskilling. I've had people in the past, I had an actual janitor in my previous role. He was a janitor and he was teaching himself to code in his spare time after work. One of our CIOs found him and asked him, what's he doing? He said, oh, he was learning to code. He then taught himself to code. We sponsored him for training. And then he eventually moved over to security because he wanted to code securely and wanted to do application security development. So there's lots of opportunities for those people that are curious, that are up for a challenge, and have that innate ability to want to protect.
The way we communicate in the business world has changed radically, with the pace of change accelerating with collaboration platforms such as Zoom, Slack, and Teams, now widely used, as well as other messaging services such as WhatsApp, Signal, and Telegram. Garrett O'Hara is the Senior Director of Sales Engineering for APAC at Mimecast. He says attackers continue to focus on email, but other platforms are getting threat actors' attention.
The sort of much-hyped death of email over the last couple of decades, I think we don't really have anything that's comparable in terms of kind of its universal access and low cost. The backbone of any kind of intercompany communication still tends to be email these days. That's not to say we're not seeing growth in the use of messaging platforms, because we definitely are. They're incredibly useful internally, and definitely seen a lot of workloads have shifted across to platforms like Slack as one example for collaboration. And then the problem is anywhere that communication happens, like that's where you're going to see the attacks happen.
These changes have led to new risks that need to be understood and mitigated.
What's interesting about this is I think we've spent so many years worrying about email, and rightly so. Like, we can't not worry about that. But I think what's actually happened is that potentially that's taken so much and sucked so much of our brain space that we're not really maybe paying the attention that we should to messaging platforms and to the risks that they pose for things like malware propagation, and even that internal compromise of users or stealing user credentials. So the risk is partly, I think it's catching up to the threats that the platforms like Slack and like Teams actually present, and other collaboration platforms. I think in large part, what we're kind of seeing is a little bit of the security community now catching up to the work that was done to enable the businesses during the COVID pandemic.
The increased workplace complexity created by these new collaboration platforms and the shift towards remote and hybrid teams means organizations need to rethink what their work environment is and how it can be secured.
We call it the work protected, and that idea, the notion of work protected, but that work surface has just become so enormous between the sort of, I suppose, the platforms that are approved by the organization. So all of the things that the security and the IT teams are aware of, and that's already enormous across collaboration, CRM platforms, cloud storage. There's like so many things that we're using in the average organization today. But I would say that the COVID pandemic and work from home, which again, we've been talking about for years, but it's squeezed some of the things that people do their jobs into WhatsApp and Signal and, you know, these other places that really we shouldn't be working, but everybody sort of is. So absolutely, there's the huge expansion in the work surface that we have to then protect.
Mitigating these new and changing risks requires organizations to rethink how they address the risk of data loss and how they detect and repel attackers.
Anywhere the communication's happening, that's a risk, right? And anywhere data is stored is a risk. And anywhere people are working on data is a risk. So those kind of three things come together. I would say being aware of the risk of those collaboration platforms and those environments is the starting point. And many of the security leaders we talk to today are kind of waking up to all the changes of COVID and realizing actually we do need to implement these technical controls on top of these platforms. So Mimecast is an example of one of those where we can scan those messaging platforms so we can look at Teams, for example, and make sure the links are safe, make sure the attachments are safe. And what about your OneDrive? What about your SharePoint? Making sure that those environments and the data that's stored there is safe and isn't going to be something that is used by an attacker to propagate an attack or to compromise a particular user. And ultimately, the job of cyber is to make sure that people everywhere they are can work protected, that they can do their job. They don't have to spend so much of their time thinking about how they work. They should be able to just go and work. And then in the background, the technical controls as much as possible should be the things that are securing the communication, whether it's on email, whether that's via a messaging platform, or whether that's some kind of collaboration platform where documents and productivity files are being worked on and kind of being updated in real time.
While cloud platforms offer great benefits, organizations need to be aware of the new risks they may introduce.
When you think about how cloud platforms sync to local machines, you've actually got multiple copies of potentially the same thing, and you resolve those conflicts as you update them. And the magic of the cloud platforms kind of takes care of those. But that sort of map of where does the data live, it's always been incredibly complex. I think that's the reality, not just the platforms that we all use, but what we use those platforms via, whether it's on our mobile device, whether it's on a work laptop, whether it's on a home computer. There's so many different options now for accessing data to be synced down, cached temporary copies to live somewhere.
The elephant in the security room is AI. AI has impacted almost every element of organizational activity, and its effects are becoming felt in the world of cybersecurity.
I don't remember anything in the decades I've been doing this stuff that has had such a huge impact over such a short amount of time, where you can clearly see the changes nearly on a weekly basis in terms of its evolution as a technology or as an approach. And the reality is, like, AI, it's actually the ultimate tool when you think about it for attackers, and specifically to lower the bar for attackers.
As we communicate and collaborate over more tools, the attack surface threat actors are targeting is expanding. Organizations must protect data when it's at rest, while in flight, and while it is being used. Creating a protected workplace that ensures malicious links and documents are not clicked on or shared is critical for thwarting cybercriminals.
That's the episode for this fortnight. Stay tuned for the next episode, and for all the latest headlines and happenings in Australian technology news, head over to itnews.com.au.